Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening on the East Coast. Good afternoon on the West Coast. This is U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. Today, we're excited to have in the studio former congressional candidate from California and the chairman of the San Francisco Republican Party and a businessman in our studio today, John Dennis. Welcome to the show, John.
Chauncey, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yes, John.
Good, great.
Can you hear? Yeah, you're coming in loud and clear. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I guess I did a brief introduction about who you are, you know, businessman and chair of the Republican Party. I guess I'd like to focus on today about the Republican Party and the elections that are coming up and what's going on. What's going on in San Francisco? And what are we trying to do to bring our people into office?
Chauncey, I'm sorry. We're having some technical difficulties. I couldn't hear what you were asking. Can you repeat that, please?
Yes, and I apologize because I have noticed that there is a delay sometimes because it is online and internet. I have no problem repeating myself if there is a problem.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I wanted to talk about the Republican Party and the 2020 election. So I just open it up for general conversation with you.
Sure. I think nationally the party is in a great position. And some of that will be helped. I think the president's going to win re-election easily, no matter what happens at this point. And I think the polls that show Biden ahead are terrible. They're pathetic polls. They're not gauging what's going to drive people to the polls. And I think they're going to further cement that polling is useless anymore. Just like the polls were terrible in 2016. I think that part of the national momentum will be driven by California, believe it or not, because California is going to pick up, I think, many of the seats that they lost, the congressional seats that we lost in 2016. I think we're scheduled to get five or maybe six of those seats back, mm-hmm. including the Orange County ones. So I think there's a very good chance. I'm confident that the president is going to be reelected. I'm confident that the Republicans will hold the Senate, and I think there's a very good chance that the Republicans will win back the House in 2020.
That's a very, very good point that you noted. That I believe, well, California, I believe, has the most amount of congressional districts in the nation. Correct, I believe. Or is it the most amount of electoral colleges?
I'm sorry, it's a good point that I noted. What?
I apologize if we're having technical difficulty, that you identified that California will be the pivoting state that will take over the House. Now, I believe that California has the most amount of congressional districts. Am I correct in saying that, John?
Yeah, I think so. I think we have 53 congressional districts, 58 counties, and we gave away quite a few of them. In the 2016 election, and it was funny because I had in 2018 we gave away a lot of seats. Earlier in 2018, I was here in with Rand Paul, and he was saying to me and a couple of other people we were playing some golf with, and he was saying, you know, make sure that you fight for those congressional seats, because even though California is not a Republican state anymore, it's a deep blue state, the congressional seats, we really need to retain the House. And that was a prophetic, wish, because I think he could see that we were going to have some trouble with those races. So just as California was pivotal in giving away the House, I think we're going to be pivotal in mm-hmm. capturing it in 2020.
I think I would agree with you. And also going back to you're commenting about the polls. We know that the liberal media is biased, and we know their polling is biased. So it's no surprise to us that they're putting out that false perception that Biden is tied with Trump, because they have nothing. I mean, just like they said that Trump had no chance to win, and look what happened. So you're right. The polls are going to end up, I believe, being outdated. It's not really talking and taking the pulse of the American people. Right now, I believe, like you said, Donald Trump will win by a resounding landslide victory, I believe, because his hand is on the pulse. His hand is on the issues. He's impacting people's lives. And I think that is what is more important to American people than the bluff and all that stuff that the Democratic Party is trying to sell, because basically they have no party platform, and they really have nothing to run on except to attack Donald Trump. And that's sad, but that they're exposing exactly who they really are, a party of emotions and a party that lacks substance. You want to comment?
Well, yeah, I mean, well, listen, they've been a party, you know, bereft and bankrupt of ideas for some time now, since Barack Obama was elected. You know, that was all driven largely by identity politics, and even before that, the left had been intellectually bankrupt. But you know, The other problem for the Democrats in terms of the top of the ticket is that what they really need is that if they're gonna make Donald Trump the focal point of the election, then they really ought to have some sort of a special heavy duty attack dog at the top of the ticket. And the problem with Joe Biden is that he's not even coherent at this point. I mean, he's elderly. I mean, Joe Biden wasn't a very good candidate when he was in his prime in 1988. And for those of you who remember back then, he had to get out of the race when he was only polling at about 1% because he plagiarized, a speech from a very famous, British politician, Neil Kinnock. And so he was a fibber and a bad candidate when he was in his prime. Now he's going to take on Donald Trump, who is a personality that overwhelms any room that he walks into, sucks the oxygen out of every situation that he's in. Unless something odd happens, Donald Trump is going to smash through. He won 30 states in 2016, and my best guess is the over and under is he's going to win 35 states in 2020.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with your position of Joe. You know, Joe might be a nice guy to sit down and have a beer with, but you don't want him to represent you.
Let me say this too. Let me say this about. I mean, I don't even know that I want to have a beer with this guy anymore, because if anything has come out, you know, with this Hunter Biden business, is that Joe Biden has been, you know, a corrupt guy for a really long time. I mean, he's passed up this image as sort of the likable dolt, and the guy who only opens his mouth to change feet, because he's constantly putting his feet in his mouth. But I mean, aside from that, he's been really corrupt. He was corrupt with the credit card companies back in Delaware in the mid 2000s. He was corrupt in Ukraine with his son. There was clear corruption when he flies into China on Air Force Two. Mm-hmm. And his son gets $1.5 billion investment into a hedge fund. You know, professionals in that field said that it takes years to develop the kind of relationship where the Chinese sovereign wealth fund will invest $1.5 billion in your hedge fund. Hunter Biden got that done in 6 days, and he'd never done anything like that before. So Joe Biden isn't really all that charming to me anymore. He's just another, corrupt, politico in Washington D.C. And I think he's going to fare his historic reputation, his reputation in history is damaged forever.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, and there's a lot coming out about, unfortunately, his past of possible sexual abuse or misappropriate touching and all these type of things. But yeah, he is definitely not a good candidate, but he's the mainstream. He's the only candidate for the Democratic Party, which is sad, because like you said, he represents the elite. They don't represent the people. They represent the corrupt left. And that's sad. And that's how come over the past 50 or 60 years, people like Joe Biden being in office has decimated the cities across this country, because all of those cities have been following suit with that philosophy of the Democratic Party. And until Republicans even come back and reinvent ourselves and try to take back the urban centers, you know, and I was talking about this yesterday on Twitter, you know, that the national GOP party needs to start investing in cities with education about not only the history that blacks played in the GOP, but to debunk the lies that the Democratic Party is spewing on these local levels, in these state levels. You know, I think that the GOP really has to start making a move to make a financial commitment to step into these districts, unless they basically wrote them off. And we know to a certain extent that's what they have from the 70s and 80s. But I think that a lot of people, and especially like myself, a lot of African Americans are starting to wake up as we look at the numbers. You know, Donald Trump had 8% of the black vote, 13% of the African American male vote, and now that has doubled. So it's going to be very interesting to see the dynamics of how this election turns out. But people are waking up in spite of. But I think that as a Republican and as a party, I hope and wish that we would play a more aggressive role in trying to reach out to minorities, because we not only have the history there behind us, but we also have the policies. And the Democrats can't even show that.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think that there's something about going after the cities. There's something bold mm-hmm. that's required, because you see mm-hmm. where politics tends to go, they tend to go towards the squeaky wheel, right? So if you have an election, a congressional district, for example, where it's really close, a party is going to invest a lot of money in that congressional district because they don't want to lose it, for sure, and they want to win it. They want to keep it. So they start ignoring the races that are not competitive. On the other hand, if someone would actually make a big investment in an area where, for example, San Francisco's a good example, where Republicans are you know, are not competitive because we have such a small voter base here. But if we could turn around a city like San Francisco and make it more Republican, mm-hmm. I think it would inspire, you know, people across the country to take a second look at, you know, joining the Republican Party in districts where they wouldn't be expected to.
That is a very good point, is that we need to pick one city and focus on that and use that as an example for the rest of the cities in the country to follow. That was right, spot on. And I agree with you. For those that are tuning in, this is U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We're proud and honored to have in the studio today former U.S. congressional candidate and chairman of the San Francisco Republican Party, John Dennison, in the studio, talking about the 2020 elections and the Republican Party. Yeah, John, I think that that's a great idea, and I never looked at it in that perspective that we should identify one town in San Francisco would be the ideal to debunk Nancy Pelosi's and all that other garbage out of there and the homelessness. If we can save San Francisco and use that as an example, you are right. I think that that would create a wave across the country for other major cities to follow.
And not just major cities. I mean, I think it would in congressional districts. Actually, there aren't that many congressional districts that are close anymore. There are a handful, but most of them are fairly firmly in the hands of one party or another. But for those few congressional districts across America, if they were to, you know, people were to hear a story about, wow, the Republicans are even turning it around in San Francisco, it would inspire, you know, Republican politics mm-hmm. around the country, and maybe even, you know, could change the face of politics in America and the world for that matter. But, you know, we certainly have our obstacles here, and San Francisco is a good target, because think about how many politicians have had their start in San Francisco and then end up, you know, having outsized influence on American politics. Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein, Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom. You know, these are all people who got their start in San Francisco politics. And a lot of bad and a lot of bad ideas have come out of San Francisco as well, and consequently so.
Yes. Now, John, you know, with the impact, with the unfortunate impact of the coronavirus, it has hampered elections in many states nationally, even here in New Jersey. I happen to be running in a local election for city council, and it's vote by mail. Has the coronavirus impacted? Well, your primaries are going to be, or your next election's in August or November now.
Yes, so we had our primary on March 3rd.
So that was done.
So yes, so the next election will be the general election, which is I want to say November 3rd or November 2nd or something like that. November 3rd, yeah. So so that's our next election, and so we'll see how the virus impacts the impacts that.
You're right. So we're not going to really be able to determine. We're hoping that the country will be open sometime, at least over the summertime. We hope that it will be reopened. But like I said, states like New Jersey and the local race that I'm running next month, we everything is voting absentee ballot, vote by mail. It's going to be a very interesting dynamic to see how the participation fares out in states that that's employing this, you know, because we all have the no stay home order or the curfew in the state of New Jersey, 8 o'clock at night. You can't be out past that time. But it's going to be very, very interesting to see how it impacts the elections in the next coming weeks.
Well, you got to keep, you know, here's the thing that we have to be careful with in terms of if we want a country that follows the, you know, the original intent of the founders. We have to watch what the Democrats do. Any rule that the Democrats support is not in terms of, you know, voting and voting, you know, rule changes and that sort of thing. Don't ever go with them because it's anti what the founders intended. It's always in the favor of the Democrats. The Democrats, every single move that we have made in the state of California and in, you know, local elections in California have been just to entrench the Democrats even more. We moved to this top two system, jungle primary, they call it, and that has only strengthened the Democrats' hand. In San Francisco, for municipal elections, where we elect our supervisors, and the way we elect our mayor, we have a thing called ranked choice voting, where you get to vote for three people, and that has only served to make the town move farther to the left. And we now have, you know, a crazy progressive board of supervisors, and a guy who was raised by the Weather Underground is now our district attorney, responsible for prosecuting crimes. That's how far left it's gotten. And he only got 25% of the vote, but he ended up winning that election because this ranked choice voting really works in favor of the progressives. So anything that the Democrats want to do in terms of, you know, voting reform and election reform, always oppose it. Always oppose it, because they only do stuff that helps them.
You know, it's ironic. Sometimes I wonder what country these Democratic leaders were raised in, because it's like they have no bearing of the Constitution, the intent of the founding fathers. It's like they came from another country and came here and were transplanted. It's really sad to see the Democratic Party really trying to dismantle, or ignoring, for that matter, the Constitution of the United States, and then trying to use it as a political weapon against our president. It's very, very, very sad. And it's, I think that historically what they have tried to done is going to go down in history, I think, is one of the worst moves that politicians could have ever made. It's just really sad. It's really, really sad to have witnessed this in our country's history. But, you know, it's even sadder in the last couple of minutes we have, the type of children that are coming out of higher education. Now you look at the AOCs, you know, the professors in these colleges have, you know, basically, you know, took over higher education where, you know, socialism on these campuses and the denial of conservative speech and dialogue. I mean, we have a bigger problem, you know, and even though we talked about the Republican Party coming back and going to the cities, you know, I think that we really need to start considering, you know, what are we doing within our educational framework to educate our children in public schools on civic responsibility, government, American history, because those things are not a part of the curriculum anymore. And then the good example is you'll get a person like an AOC. And it's sad because, you know, you want to represent personal interest versus what this country is founded on. And it becomes very, very, very difficult. What do you think about that, John?
Well, you know, you're on point there. I mean, in a previous conversation you and I had, we discussed you know, the education system. I mean, you know, the education system is skewed towards you know, the left. I mean, all the curricula has sometimes overt, you know, pitches to the left, but the subversive parts of it are all driving our kids towards the left, towards the, you know, the agenda that the left wants to really push. And so and that's not just in public schools, it's in private schools as well. So that solution that's a big conversation about how we deal with that. I mean, one possible solution, if families can swing it, is to homeschool the kids. Find it so that the kids find a way to make sure that the kids have, you know, a vibrant and active social life, but they're actually being educated in the curriculum that the parents want the kids to have, as opposed to what the schools are driving. But it's a complicated subject. I mean, you know, sometimes people don't want to hear what the solutions are, but we definitely have a system where, you know, kids are being indoctrinated, and as long as we allow that to continue, that to happen, we're going to see, you know, a corrosion in the values that have made America great.
I could not agree with you more. You know, homeschooling, I think, is a very, very good idea. And I know this is a complex, like you said, a big issue. You know, the only thing is that the people that are capable of homeschooling are those parents like ourselves that are educated. It leaves it a challenge for those or socioeconomic deprived situations. You know, school choice is the middle of the ground, if you will. But a homeschool is, you know, I think the best option. You know, I always said, or my parents always told me, that it's their job to educate me. It's the teacher's job to teach me how to learn. And I think that dynamic has changed throughout our country. Is, you know, I take the responsibility to educate my children, and it's the responsibility of the educational system to teach them how to learn, critical thinking, comprehend, which, you know, that's not taking place anymore. And that's sad, you know, and I'm very, very thankful for the education that I had and my parents had, that I was able to pass down to my children, that gave them a leg up, especially in this challenge system. John, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show and talking about the national election, the Republican Party. We've discussed a lot of ideas that impacts our country today, and I hope that you would consider coming back on again. I really appreciate the dialogue and discourse that we have. It's very informative, very fruitful. And for those that would like to reach out and contact you, can you please share your information with them, with the national audience? Thank you.
Yeah, sure. So it's on Twitter. It's at RealJohnDennis, same on Instagram. And then the website is johndennis.com.
John, thank you very, very much again, and I'll keep you and your family and also the state of California in my prayers as the nation struggles with this coronavirus challenge that we have. And I know it's probably even more challenging in San Francisco with the homeless population and the challenge that you guys face there. My hat is off to you guys for trying to fight that beast, and I hope all's well and turns out well. Okay, John?
Good stuff. Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. It's my
Cheers.
Pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We just had in the studio Republican chairman and four-time candidate for U.S. Congress, John Dennison, in the studio talking about the Republican Party, talking about some of the issues facing the Republican Party, not only in San Francisco, but the nation, and talking about the election of our next president or the re-election of a president in the 2020. For those who would like to follow U.S. national politics, you can follow us on Twitter at U.S. Politics, the number 2 day. You could also follow us on Facebook and like us on Facebook at U.S. National Elections Now. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. You can follow me on Twitter at Right Talk Radio. I'm sorry, Right Talk Host on Twitter and Right Talk Radio Host on Facebook. We want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. Please follow us, like our page, and stay tuned and look up for the next updates of our upcoming shows. We thank you all for listening. Keep you all in our prayers. Be safe, and God bless you all. Good night.